Reading from Sri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami. This is the first division, second wave, describing sadhana bhakti, Vaidhi sadhana bhakti. And now, yesterday we mentioned the first four of the 64 limbs of devotion. The very first one is to take shelter of Guru. Then there's Diksha and Shiksha, initiation and acquiring knowledge. That's number two. Number three is Vishrambena Gurur Seva, serving a Guru with respect, intimacy, love and devotion. That's number three. Then four is following the rules according to the scriptures as approved by the Acharyas. Sadavartman, Anuvartanam. Following in the footsteps of the predecessor Acharyas. Don't jump over. Interesting, consider. In light of the modern deviant movements. Following in footsteps. Predecessor means the immediate teachers. So now, this is the fifth limb of devotion, which is text 75. Sadharma pricha bogari tyaga krishnasya hetave nivaso dorakado cha gangadera pisanido. Sadharma pricha, what do we say, prashna, means to, number five is to ask, to inquire, propose questions about sadharma, inquiring about the real duties of life. Then bhog adi tyaga, renouncing sense gratification, renouncing all kinds of sense gratification. Bhogadi tyaga krishna hetave. Krishna hetu. Hetu means for the benefit. Renouncing all kinds of sense gratification, beginning with bhog and all varieties of sense gratification. In order to gain Krishna's mercy, or for the benefit of Krishna.
It's a rough world.
So now, renunciation of enjoyment to gain Krishna's mercy. Then Nivaso Dwarakado, residing in Dwarka, Nivas, or other holy places, or Ganga Sanido, means residing near the Ganga. So living in a holy place or living near a holy river. These are among the first ten. Shiva Goswami explains, what does it mean, bhog adi tyaga krishnasya hetave? Renouncing for the purpose of Krishna. Hetu means actually benefit. To benefit Krishna, really to benefit ourselves, but it means to benefit ours, to benefit Krishna, or to attain Krishna's mercy, to attain Krishna's benefit, his mercy. It means renouncing for Krishna to gain his mercy. Hetu is, oh, it's a whole Sanskrit thing, dative case. In other words, ordinarily people live for the purpose of getting food for themselves. But in this case, it indicates that the devotee, he should renounce this mentality and only live for Krishna's sake, for the benefit of pleasing Krishna, in order to attain him. So bhog adi tyaga, renunciation beginning with bhog, means renunciation of enjoyment and desires for sons, wealth and followers as well. So it says bhog adi, beginning with bhog, which means gross personal sense gratification, renouncing that, giving that up to enjoy the material body, but then giving up the desire to enjoy other bodies, because there's a certain pleasure in them possessing possessing a beautiful wife and beautiful children, obedient, intelligent children, that gives a man pleasure, gives a father pleasure. Because people glorify him. Oh, your sons are so smart, they're so glorious. And then it says wealth. So, in other words, it means bhogadi tyaga, means renouncing desires to enjoy the body. Bhoga, beginning with desires to enjoy the body, and desires to enjoy anything outside of the body. Position in this world, family, friends, property, wealth, name, fame, gain, all these things. These are external, in one sense, to the actual senses and body, but they're also a form of bhoga. As Prabhupada would say, personal sense gratification or extended sense gratification. Prabhupada would often criticize the welfare workers and humanitarians is that they were self-sacrificing, or at least sacrificing maybe their own physical comforts or personal sense gratification or the sense gratification of others. Let others be happy, let others have clothing, let others have wealth, let others attain food. And they would work so hard to distribute food for others. So it's personal sense gratification or extended sense gratification. Like even in an immediate family, the father may work very hard, and even two jobs a day, and he's not even maybe personally enjoying very much, very little sleep, very little food, and hardly enjoying, but he's working for the benefit of his family members, so extended sense gratification. So all these forms of bhoga, bhoga adityaga krishnas, krishnasya hetave. And this is a principle of bhakti. If one wants to attain devotion or bhakti for Krishna, then he should renounce this tendency and renounce these interests. Text 76. Vyavahareshu sarveshu yavarartanu vartita harivasur sammano datryas vatari gauravam. So, vyavahara sarveshu means accepting everything or only what is necessary in dealing with the body. In other words, the same principle is told in Bhagavad Gita and the yoga chapter, that the yogi doesn't eat too much nor eat too little. He doesn't sleep too much nor sleep too little. And all his activities of working and recreation, etc. He is moderate. Moderation and regulation is the key to progress in the functioning of the material body in this world. We should be moderate, not be excessive, not be radical, unless we become crazy for Krishna. When one becomes crazy for Krishna due to intense attachment, then he appears to be very radical or erratic. Even his behavior becomes erratic. Erratic means radical by normal standard. Normally everyone's sleeping 6-8 hours a day, but when one becomes crazy for Krishna, becomes a Bhava Bhakta or Prema Bhakta, he may not sleep for 2 days or 3 days. Tyaktva turanam ashesha mantali mandali patis shrenim sadatu shabat nidrahar vihari kadanichato tyakyanta jino chayo. Since the Goswamis, they gave up Nidrahara Vihara Kadi Vijito Chatyanta Dino Chayo. Nidrahara Vihara Kadi. Nidra means sleeping. Ahara means eating. Nidrahara Kadi Vijito. Eating and sleeping, they gave up the Tyakta. They gave up all these things. They would go for days, absorbed in Harikata, hearing and relishing the nectar of Harikata and association. And even when they were following somewhat of a normal schedule, they would only sleep 1 or 2 hours a day. So this is radical. This is erratic behavior. Not moderate, not regular. Very irregular. Because their behavior was just an outward. Their bodies were moving and being maintained just by the flow of their own bhava and love for Krishna. So they didn't appear like normal members of society. They didn't live regulated lives. Their lives are regulated by their bhava and prem. Sometimes no sleep, sometimes 1 hour, sometimes no food, sometimes something little, a few chickpeas and roti. But for the general devotee, who has not ascended to these highest levels of bhava and prema, then he is advised, as a limb of bhakti, it's actually a limb of devotion, to accept only what is necessary in dealing with the body. In other words, eating is also bhakti. Sleeping is also bhakti. Bathing is also bhakti. And taking proper food on time is also bhakti, or prasad. And taking medicine, or massage, or morning walk, or going to the gym, or whatever is required to maintain the physical culture of this body. This is all considered devotion. This is all within the realms of bhakti, devotion. This is all being done for the service of Krishna. Our sleeping is devotion. Our sleeping is actually devotion or bhakti. Because we're sleeping to get energy to serve Krishna. Because this body is a physical machine and it has certain requirements. It requires food, water, rest, and cleanliness. If one neglects these activities and becomes unclean, then he falls sick. If he doesn't sleep properly, he becomes sick. If he doesn't eat properly or hygienic food, he becomes sick. And when he's sick, then he's in ignorance. He's in tamagun. And he can't remember Krishna, he can't think of Krishna, and he can't act for Krishna. So therefore he's a non-devotee at that time. Non-functional entity. So therefore sleeping is bhakti. But not too much. Not that we sleep like a bear and eat like a pig. Oh, it's bhakti. Haribo. Eat like a pig. And then eat like a pig and then sleep like a bear. This is not bhakti. This is bhog. And this is told. The one thing is told, accept only what is necessary in dealing with the body. And then right before that it says, bhog adi tyaga krishna sihetave. Renounce bhog. So it seems to be a paradox. Seems to be a conflict. One side, Rupa Goswami is saying, yes, it's bhakti to renounce bhog, and it's bhakti to give up all forms of sense gratification. Then he's saying it's bhakti to accept sense gratification. So obviously we have to draw a balance and not over the top. Well, over the top means whatever you're doing, you forget Krishna. If knowingly you know that 5 hours or 6 hours of rest for this body is sufficient to give you energy to serve Krishna, and you indulge, it's called self-indulgence or indulgence. You indulge, you go over one increment beyond your limit or beyond your quota, then that's sinful. Then that's sense gratification. It's not bhakti, it's not devotion. If you need 6 hours and you take 6.5, that's sinful. That's taking more than your quota for serving Krishna. Ishavasyam idam sarvam, yatkinshat jagat yam jagat, tena dyaktena bunjita madgriha kasya svidanam. Everyone has their quota. But devotees also have a quota. Yes, you can have something to eat. And in Krishna consciousness, and in bhakti yoga, there's a full measure of quota. The Lord is so merciful, He gives a full measure of quota. He doesn't say that, He says you can eat, and that can be devotion. Your eating can be bhakti. And your sleeping can be devotion. And even your mating, your sex enjoyment, or sex pleasure can also be devotion. And your fighting can also be devotion. Where ordinarily, in other yoga paths, these would be prohibited in any sort or any way. But in bhakti yoga, Krishna is so lenient and so liberal. He's telling in Bhagavad Gita, dharma virudha kamosmi. Dharma virudha kamosmi. I am that kam asmi. I am that kam. I am that lust. I am that mitun. I am that sex enjoyment, that sexual union, which is dharma virudha, which is not against dharma, which is not against religious principles. So the religious principles are that man and woman that are lawfully married by proper yajna and homa and Vedic ritual, they may combine together to produce God-conscious children. Otherwise, there's no facility or no room for overindulgence in such activity. So if one is indulging in activity only for producing children, then it's bhakti, it's Krishna consciousness, if one fulfills the requirements. of raising their children in a God-conscious way. Otherwise, there's an injunction in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, Gurur Nasishyat, Pitaro Nasishyat. Vrishabhadeva is teaching his sons that one should not become a guru or pita. One should not become a guru or a father or a mother or any type of teacher unless they can liberate their dependents from the cycle of birth and death. In other words, unless they can make them Krishna conscious. So it's called Pati Guru. Pati Guru means husband. Pati Guru, who's also the pita, he's the father. So that one can become father or husband if he's first of all guru. And he becomes guru by attending Gurukul. He attends Gurukul for the first 25 years of his life. And from guru, he learns to be guru. It takes one to make one. So he attends Gurukula for 25 years, first 25 years, or say 20, 25 years of life. He learns Vasantantau Gurorhitam. He learns how to control his senses and live for the benefit of the guru and become tolerant and peaceful, self-controlled. Studies the Vedas, learns how to live a regulated, pure, God-centered life. And then he leaves that ashram, Brahmacharya ashram, to enter Grihastha ashram. And then he's been trained to become guru. Guru means one who controls her senses. Vacha Vegam, Manasakura Vegam, Jiva Vedam, Urupasta Vegam. So he's learned all these, control all these pushings. While in Gurukul, he learns to control the pushings as a brahmachari. Guru Nishishyat, Pitaro Nishishyat. Then he becomes proper Pati Guru. Pati Guru, not Jagat Guru, not Varna Guru, not Varna Guru, not Jagat Guru or Parivrajak Guru. But he becomes Pati Guru, Father Guru, Husband Guru, Guru for one, or Guru for two, Guru for wife or children. A Jagat Guru is universal Guru, Guru for all the Varnas, Guru for all the Ashramas. That's a big order that may require a little more study, a little more development. So I accept only what is necessary in dealing with the body. Vyavahareshu sarveshu. Yavat artanavartita. Observing the Ekadasi Vrata, Hari Vasara Samano. Hari Vasara Samano. Samano. So, Saman. Man means, like we say, Amanina Manidena. So, with proper respect, one honors, respects the Hari Vas, the day that Hari, the Vas means residence. The place of the residence, the location of Lokastandi, of Hari, that day in the month where one can meet Hari, one can move very close to Lord Hari, to Bhagavan Sri Krishna, by offering his suman, or rather samman, his complete respect. Complete respect means he respects this day with his body. He respects this day, he honors man, we say man. He respects this day, like we say, offering respects to others, not expecting their respect in return. So he respects this day with the activities of his body, with the limbs of his body, offering dandavats, dancing for the pleasure of the Lord, staying up all night dancing in kirtan, ulas kirtan, technically. And he respects this day, Harivas, the day of Hari, with his words, by speaking stotrams, Gopal Sahasranam, Radha Sahasranam, Vishnu Sahasranam, Radhika Astakam, Yuga Kishor Astakam. So he respects this day with the activities of his vacha, kayo mana vacha, kayo body, vacha words. And he respects this day with his mind. He's thinking of the Lord's pastimes, and he may be speaking about the Lord. So in this way he engages all of his sense activities, and showing great regard, honor, and respect for this holy day, which happens twice a month, called Hari Vasara. This is a limb of bhakti. This makes the body of bhakti. The body of bhakti is made of these different limbs. Limbs means arms. Our body has two arms, two legs, 10 fingers, or 10 digits, 10 toes, and ears, two ears, nose, face, etc. There are different bodily parts. I remember in medical school, we had to memorize the 212 bones of the human skeletal system, something like that. The 24 ribs, and the floating ribs, and the carpals, and metacarpals, and phalanges, and tarsals, and metatarsals, and phalanges, and femur, and ulna, and radius, and sternum, and all these bones all over the place. So there are so many bones and parts and parcels that make the human body. So there are so many parts which make the body of devotion. Bhakti, bhakti sharir, the body of devotion. So they're called anga. It's called, we say, bhakti anga. These are the 64 angas. So all of these limbs together make the composite. They make the complete whole, the whole body. If you have a human body with one arm and one leg and one ear, then it's a rather deformed body, something wrong. One arm, one leg, one ear, one eye, there's a problem. So similarly, in the devotional body of bhakti or devotion, if you only have 10 limbs or 3 limbs, there may be some deformity in the expression of devotion. There may be some lack in the surrendering process or in the ability to please Krishna. So the last item here, which is the 10th item, if you're making a list, is that giving respect to Amalaki, Ashwat, and other items. Datri Ashwat Adi Gauravam. Gaurava. Gaurava means respect, honor. And these are, of course, sacred trees, the Datri tree. And the Ashwat tree, this is the technical name. Generally, people refer to the Ashwat tree as people tree, a very large tree that usually grows near temples. The tree likes temples. It grows near temples and has a very interesting leaf. The leaf is shaped like a children's kite or a heart. Looks like a heart. The outline of a heart with a tail on it, like this, and then a long piece going down. It's called people. And Hari is a very sacred and holy tree. And some traditions, in the Shaivite tradition, they accept, or they believe, or they see that Ashwat tree as a representative of Shiva and Shakti, Lord Shiva and Parvati, his consort. In the Vaishnava tradition, which of course we have our Shastras, such as Hari Bhakti Sudodaya. In Hari Bhakti Sudodaya, there's one chapter, it's called the Ashwat Briksh Mahima, which is the glories of the Ashwat Briksha, the Ashwat tree. And the glories of the people tree. And it's amazing, so many glories there. Because we know about the Tulsi Briksha Mahima. We Vaishnavas, we know very much about the glories of Tulsi that are written also. In Padma Puran, there's the Tulsi Mahatmyam. There's a whole chapter in Padma Puran about the glories of Tulsi. Anyone who sees Tulsi, anyone who touches Tulsi, anyone who glorifies Tulsi, anyone who worships Tulsi, anyone who remembers Tulsi, Tulsi Devi Ki Jai, he becomes free from all his sins, he becomes liberated, he becomes wealthy, opulent, influential. In other words, all good things come to you. So all these same boons and benedictions are also there in relation to the Mairabalan tree or Datri tree and this Ashwat tree. So it's a very, very, very special tree. If you sleep under an Ashwat tree, you'll be free from bad dreams. If you have bad dreams, of course, maybe a little dangerous. If you're some lady and you go sleep under an Ashwat tree out in the jungle somewhere, somebody may catch you. A tiger or a tiger-like man. So you have to be careful. But nevertheless, these benedictions are there. Sleeping under an Ashwat tree, you get free from ghosts. In the Vaishnava tradition, we say, or it is told in Shastra, that the Ashwat Briksh represents Lakshmi Narayan. Lakshmi Narayan, they live there, and they can be worshipped there. And the Ashwat Briksh is a very curious tree. It says that the Vaishnavas, other worshippers, Shaivites, yogis, etc. They worship the tree and they may circumambulate the tree, which is very beneficial. So much Sukriti and good merit comes to one's life by this practice of Parikrama, Ashwat Briksha Parikrama. And they can touch the tree, but Vaishnavas are, there's a law for the Vaishnavas. If one is a Vaishnava, he can only touch the tree on Saturday, the Ashwat tree. As at one time, one place we were living, we were doing puja, the Ashwat tree. One Brijvasi was encouraging us to worship the Ashwat tree. Red string and Akanda ghee lamp and all these different items and whatnot. So on Saturday, then one can put his head to the tree and embrace the Ashwat tree as a Vaishnava, or let's say aspiring Vaishnava, and offer his sankalpa and his prayers. Very, very powerful. Very, very powerful tree. And as anyone who has some familiarity with Bhagavad Gita, in the Vibhuti Yoga chapter, Vibhuti Yoga Adhyaya, Krishna is saying, Ashwat Brikshaham. He says in that chapter, among trees, among so many trees are there, among all these trees, I am the Ashwat Briksh. The Ashwat Briksh, that Vibhuti, that power, Vibhuti means power, that super excellence, that uniqueness. Wherever there's some, whatever form of that species is most unique or most powerful, most unique or most powerful, that form represents Krishna. Therefore he says, among letters, Akshar A. He says, among letters, I am A. Among fishes, I am the shark. Makara. He says, Makara. Makara Asmi. This is in Bhagavad Gita, you must be knowing. So there he says, among trees, I am the Ashwat tree. And I think in the English Bhagavad Gita, it used to be translated holy fig tree. Sometimes you may remember it says, among trees and the holy fig tree. I remember when the first Gita we received was 1973, Bhagavad Gita as it is. And it said, among trees I am the holy fig tree. And I was living in California and we had a fig tree. A fig tree is very short, it's not very tall, a few feet. It makes these figs. Figs are like kishmish. You say anjir? No, is that anjir? Anjir means fig. So anjir, fig. These little figs, they come Kalmirna figs, or yellow, kind of disc-like ones. Then there's a little drop, they're like a little drop-like ones called Black Mission figs. So we had a Black Mission fig tree. So I said, this is nice, you know, Krishna's here. Fig tree, I am the holy fig tree. And I would eat those figs and think, oh, I'm becoming holy. I'm becoming holy by eating these figs. Of course, I offered them also. But if you offer something, then you become holy because it's prasadam. So for a long time, I thought that this little tree, puny little tree in my yard, was a tree in the Bhagavad Gita. And later, subsequent editions of Gita, it said, among trees, I am the people tree or the Ashwat tree. And I said, It doesn't say fig anymore in the Bhagavad Gita as it is. I better inquire about this discrepancy. Then I asked, I said, what is this? There's no more holy fig tree? And then they said, well, this is more accurate. I mean, the tree is in the genus and species of Religiosus figamosus, if you want to get technical. Religiosus figamosus. So it's a religious tree. There's many trees in this category, the banyan tree and Ashwat tree. They're all called religious sacred trees. This is in Latin, genus and species. But the species of this is called Figamosus, because in the Ashwat tree, and maybe banyan also, I can't remember. But on the speciality of the Ashwat Briksha, which represents Krishna. Krishna says in Gita, I am that tree. On the branches of the tree, when it's ripe or the tree is mature, it produces little fruits. It's not on the end of the branches, on the twigs like a usual fruit. It's even along the main trunks. These little black fruits will just appear on the horizontal surface and the birds will come and eat them. as religiosus phygmosus. Ashwa tree is a very special tree, and it should be honored if we have the opportunity. And it's right here. This is nectar devotion. This is Rupa Manjari. This is Rupa Goswami. And many of these things are, as he said in the onset, these 64 limbs of devotion are being derived. Actually, he has gleaned or extracted the primary items which are mentioned in his brother's work, Hari Bhakti Vilas. So the origin of these items of devotion is coming from Hari Bhakti Vilas, which of course is a collection of different Shastric statements about the Hari Bhakti, the glories of devotion to Hari. There's quotations in Hari Bhakti Vilas from Skanda Puran, from Padma Puran, from Bhagavat Puran, from all different Puranas and different Vedic literatures. It's a composite collection, anthology. Now Rupa, having read that book, he extracted the essence of that book into a list of 64. So each of these 64 items are very important in the practice of devotion. It's all about cultivating Trinada Pisunice Na Tuhari Vasahishana. If you think about these 10 items which we mentioned, these are the first 10 items of devotion. These 10 items, if one actually realizes this one shloka, if one realizes this one shloka from Sri Chaitanya Shikshastakam, then all these 10 items will be included. 10 and 1, 1 and 10. One will become very humble, very tolerant, respectful of other living entities, trees, etc. Be very careful and respectful in his dealings. And this will enable him to attain access to the uninhibited and unrestricted chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Because the Lord resides everywhere. As we said, the Lord resides in the tree. The Ashwat tree is Krishna. Krishna says, Ashwat Brikshaham. I am this tree. Krishna is the Ashwat tree. With Krishna, because that's a unique tree. That's a special tree, a special, powerful, unique tree. You place it near the wall, it breaks down your boundary wall and breaks up anything in its sight. It's a very powerful tree, powerful roots. They spread everywhere and break everything. Ashwat tree. It's like a conquering tree. So this powerful, unique species of trees represents Krishna. So ultimately every tree is Krishna, every plant is Krishna, every atom is Krishna. So by learning to respect one or two, one learns to respect all. By learning to respect all living entities in all forms, and understanding and realizing that Krishna is within all living entities and all life forms, then he becomes Amanina, Manidena. Then what's the result of that? Kirtaniya Sadahari. He can always have access to the holy name. He can always have a friendly relationship with the holy name and always remain in the association of the holy name. Because Lord Chaitanya, this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami has concentrated the Hari Bhakti Vilas into one scripture, rather concentrated, condensed. And what to speak of what Lord Chaitanya has done? Lord Chaitanya has concentrated or condensed the sum total of all Vedic scriptures and plus more, plus his own prayojan or his own siddhanta. He's compressed everything into 8 shlokas. That's really Vedanta. That's the Vedanta of the Vedanta. Everything is there. So now to conclude this list of 10 items, Esham Matra Dash Anganam Bhavet Paramba Rupata. Rupa Goswami says that preliminary bhakti should consist of these 10 angas. So these are the first 10. These are positive items. These should be accepted. These should be endorsed and practiced by the devotees. They're important. He's saying, he lists the 10, and he doesn't say, you can pick and choose. You can show respect to the Ashwat tree, but you don't have to take initiation. You can follow Ekadasi, like many pious Hindus do, but You don't have to take diksha or follow any shiksha of a guru. You don't have to follow the path sadavartman. You don't have to follow the path of the previous acharyas. You can live in a holy place like so many people live here, Vrijabhasis. They don't do anything else. They don't observe Ekadasi. Many, many, many Vrijabhasis. You may live with them. And you ask me, you observe Ekadasi? As I told you about Jagannath Puri, we've already heard about how they observe the Puri Vasis. In Jagannath Puri, they observe Ekadasi by locking her up in her temple. They lock her up with a big padlock, and they say, now you don't go anywhere, don't move anywhere out of your temple, don't look at anybody. Keep your eyes closed. Have a nice sleep today. We will stay up all night, maybe, but you sleep all night. And now everyone comes to the temple, everyone comes, practically all the Puri Vasis and neighboring villagers, they make sure that at least 2 days a month they take darshan of Jagannath and get Mahaprasad, Jagannath's dal and Jagannath's rice. And those 2 days are in Ekadasi. This is a very speciality of Jagannath, Jagannath's bhaktas. And he doesn't mind. There's no reprisal, there's no reaction. Skanda Purana is telling in the Purushottam Mahatmyam, for those devotees or fortunate souls that take birth, they take birth in Jagannath Puri and their Puri Vasis, then their eating of fish is equal to Havishan. Havishan means a very strict type of vegetarian diet that one eats to purify his existence while observing a vrata or some type of fasting. It's unspiced khichdi, some rice or dal, sesame seed. There's a few items that one can take. The Brajagopis were observing Havishan Brat for 1 month while worshipping goddess Katyayani in Margashirsha month, which is coming up right after Purnima. In about 3 weeks it starts Margashirsha Mas. Autumn. Not autumn, but fall, I guess. Pre-winter, whatever. So here, now that's Jagannath Puri. Now let's look at Vrindavan, because that's where we are. And it's also a similar kind of idea, or maybe benediction or compensation applies here, because all the dhams are equal. So what applies to one applies to another. Otherwise there's some discrepancy. The dhams are all transcendental. So the Puri Vasis or the Brij Vasis, down the Kadasi, they eat lots of samosas and lots of kachoris. And I say, today's Ekadasi. And oftentimes I distribute prasadam from Delhi, and I ask before I give to people, I say, this is not Ekadasi, this is not anakalp, this is not falahar, there's some grains, this is ladu. No, that's okay, I don't follow Ekadasi. Give me 2, 3, 4. In the neighborhood here, there, the Brahmins, etc. Then you have a whole group, 20, 30, out of 20 or 30 people you may be distributing prasadam to, maybe one said, I'm fasting. And everyone looks at him, come on, what is this? It's prasad, don't forget it. They're transcendental to all the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti. They're under the platform of rag. But we cannot be so presumptuous and imitate those that have different adhikar. It's interesting to see how different translators present the same concepts. Because according to one's understanding of Sanskrit language, first of all, and according to one's spiritual level of advancement, second of all, and according to the level of mercy that one has derived from the Mahajanacharyas, third of all, there's a difference in ability to translate or convey transcendental knowledge from the Sanskrit language into another language. Not all translators are the same. No two human beings are the same, what to speak of translators. No two devotees are the same. There's so many different levels, so many different qualifications, high, low, medium, etc. So if we go back a little bit, Since these are the 64 indispensable parts or functions of sadhana bhakti, this one is Vishramba, Vishrambena Guru Seva. In this particular translation we're studying from, it's saying here, Vishramba is translated as serving the guru with respect, Vishramba. No doubt that the disciple should be very, very respectful and always maintain a healthy mood of respect towards a guru. But actually the word Vishramba is much deeper than that. Much, much deeper. Without even being very esoteric about the Sanskrit. Because Shramba means deep respect. And V can be taken as, V means excessive. Excessive respect. Vishramba. Or it can be broken up as Vishramba. So when it's Vishramba, it means without too much respect. Which means, and this is the general, the more, let's say, enlightened translators, the more advanced devotees who will present such phrases, they will say that Vishramba, which is a very important point, it's actually the third limb of devotion. These four are the doorway to bhakti. If the door is jammed, or if the door is locked, then it's very difficult to proceed. If you can't get through the entrance door. So the door itself is guru. Guru is the door to bhakti. Now the most important point in approaching that door of bhakti, the most important consideration in approaching the guru or the doorway of bhakti is surrender. So therefore that's listed as the first point. Guru Parashraya, take shelter of the guru, surrender. Krishna is telling the same point in the fourth chapter of Gita, verse 34. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevya uvadikshanti te gyanam ganenas tatvadarshana. Pranipatena, come before the guru, lie at his feet with straw between the teeth, expressing great humility and submission of mind, heart, body, soul, and then with the most plaintive and humble entreaty, the most submissive words of respect, one begs the guru, oh please Gurudev, oh please Gurudev, I am suffering in the ocean of birth and death, or life after life, please be kind upon me, please uplift me with your mercy, please take me out of the cycle of birth and death, please accept me as your surrendered servant, please don't forsake me. These type of words of submission. Guru Parashraya. Then secondly, then one receives initiation. Sri Krishna Dikshadi Shikshanam. Sri Krishna Dikshadi Shikshanam. Beginning with Sri Krishna Diksha, the disciple receives the Krishna mantra. Vaishnavas. Vaishnava Diksha. He receives the Krishna mantra, which can be one of two or three different forms of the Krishna mantra, which means also Gopal mantra. The 18-syllable Gopal mantra is glorified in the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. And that is the mantra of preference, is the most popular mantra in Krishna Diksha, the 18-syllable mantra. But there's also the 8-syllable and 10-syllable mantras which are given. They're all of equal rank and power. Lord Brahma, in Brahma Samhita, he was initiated with the Krishna mantra of 18 syllables, Ashtakshara, Ashtakshara mantra. And that's the mantra that we have in our Brahma Gaudiya, Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. We receive the same mantra as our founder. Brahma received this mantra from Krishna, or more specifically from Divya Saraswati. And then that mantra is given to Narada Muni. Narada Muni gave the mantra to Vyasadeva. And the mantra is coming down in parampara to our Guru Varg, our benevolent line of guardians or acharyas. So we all have also received that mantra. So then, next point, after receiving Diksha, then there's Shiksha, training, and teaching, then serving the spiritual master. That's number three. And four is following the path of the saints, sadhu vartmana, vartmana vartate. So serving the spiritual master, we said, we gave one translation of Vishramba as with great respect. Was it? Service to Guru with respect. And this translation, which is more to the point, serving the spiritual master with affectionate zeal. That actually, Vishramba means, V means without. V means free of or without. That's a squirrel chanting his rounds. He was in the temple, but the temple commander said, go outside and chant. You're making too much noise. Now he's outside. He was in squirrel temple. Ah! I had to speak squirrel talk. He's giving his class. It's quite a... This is like... they said it in Naimisharanya. Naimisharanya, when Sutta Goswami was speaking and Shonaka Rishi and all the sages were inquiring and listening, they were all hearing with rapt attention, very concentrated, undivided attention. And it was so quiet, so tranquil and peaceful that you could hear a pin drop. If you took a pin, drop, boom. But here in Braj Mandal, everywhere there's sound. So much sound. Everyone has something to say. Every dog has something to say. Every bird has something to say. Every squirrel has something to say. No one is quiet. I guess they're all busy in Nam Sankirtan. Because after all, you have to remember that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Vrindavan for 2 months. He came on the Kartik Purnima, which is sometime later. He came in Kartik Purnima, and then he stayed Margashirsha month and one more month, and then he returned to eastward, stopped at Kumbh Mela, took Kumbh Snan, Magma Snan, and then went on back to Bengal and Puri. So when he came here for 2 months to Braj Mandal, then he initiated all the living entities in Nam Sankirtan. So for the last 500 years, all the living entities of Vrindavan have been chanting Nam Sankirtan in Parampara. All the dogs are chanting, Gaur, Gaur, Gaur. Haribo, Haribo. All night long, Gaur, 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 Gaur. They're chanting Gaur, Gaur, Gaur all night long. Gaur, Gaur, Gaur. Because they were initiated by their father dog. And their father dog was initiated by their grandfather dog. And their grandfather dog was initiated by the great grandfather dog. Kuta Pitamaha. Kuta Pitamaha means a great grandfather dog. Kuta means dog. So it's coming down like this. So we can't hold them responsible. They're simply humbly carrying out the order of the parampara to always chant the glories of Gaur and Krishna. Rala, 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 rala. If you listen closely at night, some dogs are in Gaur Sampradaya. Some dogs are in Radha Sampradaya. Rala, 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 rala. If you listen, it's actually they're saying Radha, Radha. A very deep voice, baritone or E minor, whatever it is. It's quite clear if you have the ears to hear it. Radha, Radha. All right already. Radha, Radha. Many times I was lying here in Braj Mandal and different dogs were chanting and I had this realization actually. They're chanting in separation. They're staying up all night. I'm sleeping. I mean, just see how advanced the dogs are. They're staying up all through the rasa dance. encouraging Radharani to dance. Dance, dance, dance. And what is my contribution? What is my contribution to the rasa dance? I'm snoring and passing air. I'm just sleeping during the rasa dance. 2 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock at night. And the dogs are, Radha, they're encouraging, Radha, dance, dance, Radha, dance, 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 Radha. Spin in a circle, play the veena, sing with Krishna, sing separately, dance, Krishna, you dance, Krishna dances, you sing, Krishna sing, dances. You dance, Krishna sings. They're saying, Radha, Radha. This is their language, this is their offering, this is their kirtan, Radha kirtan. Radha rasa kirtan. This is rasa kirtan. But we go outside with a shoe, hey, shut up, boom. Braj is an extraordinary place. It's about 200 years ago, there was one Muslim man living in Barsana. Something, whatever, Akbar or whatever, some kind of Muslim name, whatever. But every night, about 1 o'clock at night, 1:30 at night, he would go in the forest below the hill of Barsana. So, Brahma, it's called Brahma Parvat. The four faces, Chaturmukh Brahma, his four faces became four mountains. One face became where the main temple is, and the other is Vilasgar, Dangar, Mangar. And where the main temple is, it doesn't really, there's no name for that. It's the main, that's the fourth hill. Vilasgar, Dangar, Mangar. And this Muslim man, he played Pakawaj or Dolak or Mardanga, some type of drum. Can't remember. Maybe Dolak. Oh no, Pakawaj. Pakawaj would be more traditional. Kind of a large, looks like Mardanga, only shaped with wood and has some spools on it. And you can control the tone with the moving of these round spools of wood. And it itself is made of wood. It's quite long. Very deep sound. It's a classic drum. Playing ragas, pakawaj, pakawaj, pakawaj. Looking something like mridanga, but very big, deep sound. So he would go out at night, just below the Brahma Parvat, where the temple was, in the forest. And he would play the drum, and very loud, very, very loud. Hour after hour after hour, continuously, very loud, every night from 1 o'clock, 12:30 to 2 or 2:30. And the pujari was up in the temple because, and even to this day, throughout the night, they have Astakaliya seva for Radharani, following the lead of Nimbarkacharya. This is, temple is under the auspices of the Nimbark Sampradaya. Larali Lal Mandir, that beautiful little girl and her lovely friend Lal, Krishna and Radha. So throughout the night they're doing seva. The deities, of course, as normal temples, the deities are put to rest. But then they have this arrangement with the pulley and the rope is going into the deity room and they fan the deity. Although there's electricity in the temple, they don't use this electric polar fan because they want to maintain this service. So 24 hours a day, some pujaris are actively, lovingly, and personally engaged in the service of Radharani and Barsa and Krishna. They don't want 1 second to go by without personally attending to the Lord. It's a very nice bhav. The Lord should sleep, but we should not sleep. We should serve. In fact, even Prabhupada made a statement one time. It's in this What is a Difficulty book. Prabhupada said once to Shruti Kirti, oh, you're up, because Shruti Kirti couldn't sleep one night. Prabhupada said, oh, you're up, that's very good that you're up. Actually, I also cannot sleep. Actually, I want that none of my disciples should sleep. Sleeping is a waste of time. Sleeping is a dead condition. None of my disciples should sleep. So that's easier said than done. Although that was Prabhupada's example, he didn't sleep hardly at all himself. And even his sleeping was only preparing, even he was, of course, serving Krishna while he was resting. But that was his statement. My disciple should not sleep. He should serve Krishna. So the pujaris, they also stay up all night. They take turns and they pull, all night long they pull the rope. And they fan Radharani. And they maybe sing some songs, gentle, soft songs, and they pull the rope back and forth. So this pujari, he's pulling the rope late at night. And he's hearing, da 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 da. He said, this guy is making so much noise all the time. It must be disturbing Radharani. How can she sleep? This is sleep time. So he went down one time and he heavily chastised. He said, stop this. You're disturbing Radharani. She can't sleep. And this and that. And he just stopped his playing drum. So the Muslim man, he was quiet, respectful, obedient. So he did. He stopped. He stopped for one night. And then the next night he was thinking, he went to play the drum. Because what he was actually doing, he was inspired within his heart by Srimati Radharani. She said, oh, listen, you know, I'm having my rasa dance with Krishna, with my beloved, and you're a very good musician, you're a very good drummer. I would like very much that if you would come every night and play your drum for our rasa dance, for our pleasure, for our satisfaction. So he had that inspiration from Radharani, from within the heart, or a dream, or whatever. So he'd come every night, and he would do his service. This was his service to Radharani, which the pujari didn't know anything about. So then the second night, he returned to his place in the forest below Barsana Hill, and he was thinking, well, I guess I shouldn't play the drum because the pujari warned me that he would crack me and punish me, and he told me he was disturbing Radharani. So he just started crying. He didn't play the drum, but he started crying. Oh, Radharani, this is my service, and I'm prohibited from doing this service. I can't play the drum for your pleasure, for your rasa dance. What is the value of my life? Why I exist? Why I live? If I can't do it, this is my service. You give me this service at night, and in the day I have no specific individual service given to me directly by you. And this is the real meaning of my life. I live for this service. This is, gives my life value, and I long for this service. And I can't wait all day until I can. I just wait for the day to end so I can immediately come and perform this service. Oh, why bother to live if I can never do this service anymore? Because if I play the drum, then Pujari will beat me, maybe even kill me. Get all the Brahmins together and say, "Hey, this guy is. So let me give up my body right now. And maybe in my next life I can have a better situation to serve you." So he just gave up his body. So the next day they found this dead body there next to the Mridanga, or Pakavaj. And then the news got to the Bajari, and he felt rather sad. Oh, this must have died, old man, whatever. Then he had a dream. The Bajari had a dream. And in the dream, Radharani came in his dream. Or maybe that afternoon or morning or whatever. Very close to the time. He said, oh, you stupid pujari. You stupid pujari. Don't you know who this person was? This person was rendering service on my order. Every night he was playing this Bhakavach for my pleasure. I was very happy. He was a very good drummer. I was very happy. He was encouraging me and exciting me to dance more and more enthusiastically for the pleasure of Sham. And now you have frightened him so much, and by prohibiting him from rendering this service, that he's given up his body out of desperation, out of frustration. He's given up his body, and he can no longer do this service. So you should understand, you have actually caused this man to give up his body. You've actually killed this man. You've killed my devotee. So now I want you to perform some atonement. I want you and your family to arrange for a very elaborate samadhi ceremony for this Muslim person. And this is unheard of. It's unheard of in Vedic culture, of a high-class pujari, Brahmin, and there isn't even such a thing in, for Muslims, a samadhi ceremony, arranged for the samadhi ceremony. And I want you to invite all the sadhus and brahmins from all over Vrindavan. And I want you to glorify this great devotee of mine. I want you to put him in samadhi. First of all, make a samadhi for him and put him in samadhi, and every year observe his tirobhav as a great celebration. So this dream and order he received in the dream. So of course he submitted to that and arranged for all the proper rituals and executed that order, which is quite an amazing thing. And these, that was about 150 years ago or so. And that samadhi is located on the inside. There's an inner footpath between, in Barsana, between Pili Pukur and Prem Sarovara. There's the main road where the buses go, but then where Pili Pukur is, there's some ashrams and bhajankutirs, and there's some small footpath, alleyway, not alleyway, but footpath. And the side there, the samadhi's there, Ustad Akbar or whatever, his name is there. The samadhi is made like Vaishnava style. Vaishnava samadhi for this great Muslim devotee. But following the path of the saints, that was what we were talking about. Somehow there was some point I was connecting it to, but I can't remember. I just got captivated by that story and I went with it. Oh yeah, I was just talking about that. I was on my tangent of the dogs barking and actually chanting Radhe Radhe, and how much influence people, how you can't, what I was saying is you can't understand who people are in Braj. And you think the dogs are saying ruff, 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 woof, woof, woof. We think the dogs are saying woof, W-O-O-F, woof, woof, ruff, 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 R-U-F-F, R-U-F-F, ruff, ruff. But actually, if you listen to it, raw dog, raw dog. And so we don't know who's who in Vrindavan. And here this person's banging on a drum, and in the middle of the night. And they say, hey, shut up, stop banging on the drum, you're keeping me up. You're keeping me up, or you're keeping my... Like we want to throw a shoe at the dog and say, shut up, you're keeping me awake. Or some man beats on the drum in front of your house at 1 o'clock. What will you say? Hey, shut up, I'm trying to sleep. And he'll say, no, I'm playing for the Rasa dance. You say, well, you're cracked. He said, call the police, put him in an insane asylum. Put him in a straitjacket. So this Braj, that's what the point I was making, which Ameya reminded me of, Ameyatma, is that it's very difficult to understand who's doing what and why. We know where they're doing it, but we don't know who they are or what exactly they're doing or why they're doing it. So as usual, you have to be very careful about passing any type of judgment in the Braj Mandal or anywhere. So then, just to summarize, as we're doing, then inquisitiveness about the esoteric ways of spiritual practices, that's the fifth one. The sixth one is renouncing all pleasures, relatives, wealth, wife, and children for the sake of receiving the compassion and grace of the Supreme Lord Krishna, and sacrificing everything for the sake of Krishna. That's Bhogadi Tyaga Krishna Sihetave. Living in Dwarka, Nivasa Dwarkado, living in Dwarka or other sacred places sanctified for the association with Krishna. And then this is an interesting point. Krishna Hetave, Bhogadi Tyaga Krishna Sihetave, for the sake or benefit of Krishna, means receiving the grace of the Lord, which alone is the cause of God realization. In all walks of daily conduct, one should accept only such things which are absolutely reasonably necessary. One should observe Ekadasi and Janmasthami and other sacred days, which are favorable to the Lord by observing a fast. And one should give importance to Myra Balan trees and the holy fig tree. He calls it the holy fig tree also. Ashwat. These 10 functions or angas of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti are stated here as primary. So these are the primary functions. And tomorrow we'll start with these other functions. Another list of 10. This first list of 10, of course, we have what we call do's and don'ts. yama niyama. Niyama is do and yama is don't. It's niyam seva. Do things we should do things this month. So these are some things we should do. So after first listing the do's, the things that we should do, the activities we should positively engage in, these are 10 things, the first 10, top 10, first 10, respecting guru, respecting trees, following the saints, giving up everything for the pleasure of the Lord. And then the next 10 we'll hear tomorrow are things we should reject, give up. So these are primary, these are the most primary limbs of devotion.